Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, and also Pinterest, Neil Haley. And I am so honored to have on the show an NBA legend. And it's amazing the number of Hall of Famers I've had on the show, and to talk to this guy for sure. I remember him playing with North Carolina and he got his number retired. I remember the years of winning the NBA champions. So he's a seven-time NBA All-Star, part of the NBA 50th anniversary team, a world champion, a Hall of Fame legend, James Worthy. James, thanks for calling.
It's a pleasure. How are you?
I am doing fantastic, and it's fantastic to talk to you. And a lot of times on our show, we focus on life after. But I wanted to kind of look at your career in certain ways because, again, people that, you know, are today's basketball fans in the NBA, they don't look at history and look at the teams when you played with the Lakers and how great a career you have. And so for our audience out there that might not know so much about you, James, I gave you a little bit of a background. How would you summarize your career?
Well, I played basketball for one reason, and really one reason only. When I was in the eighth grade, I decided that I needed to get a scholarship because my parents really weren't going to be able to afford me college. So that was my first incentive, was to excel in basketball in high school, and then I got a scholarship to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Well, I played for a great coach. Coach Dean Smith was fortunate enough to win a national championship in 1982 alongside Michael Jordan and Sam Perkins, his teammates. So I was drafted by the Lakers in 1982. And from that point, I spent my entire career with the Los Angeles Lakers, where we were fortunate enough to win three championships in 85 against the Celtics and 87. Against the Celtics, and in 1988, we won the back-to-back championships against the Pistons. And from there, some All-Star games, seven All-Star games. Fortunate enough to be inducted into both the college and professional NBA Hall of Fame. And it's been a great career and a great opportunity for me to use my platform, now retired, to give back to the community as best I can.
And that's so true, James. I talked to so many professional athletes and athletes in general. They had a different mindset. Sometimes the ones that stay the course wanted to go to college. They wanted an opportunity to go to college. And it sounds like that's why you got involved in basketball, and it led to something that you probably never imagined you would be able to attain, right?
Well, I never thought professional. That never entered my mind. That was... I had two older brothers, and my mom and dad were working extremely hard to put them through a small college in North Carolina. And so when I heard the word scholarship, I was like, oh my God, I can get a free education, and my parents won't have to get grants and loans to try to get me money to go to college. And that was my incentive. So after I broke my ankle in college, my rookie year, my freshman year, I thought my basketball career was, kind of over. So I never really thought about the NBA. I just thought about, getting a college degree. And, I was fortunate enough to leave school after my junior year and join the Lakers. But I always had my degree in sight. And, like a lot of guys do who spend 2 or 3 years in college, they go back and get their degree, and that's probably the most satisfying thing that I've achieved in my life.
Now, think about your career with the Lakers and the players you got to play with. I mean, the amazing fact, you talked about Sam Perkins, Michael Jordan, yourself on one team winning the national championship. Then you went to Showtime. So how about that? I mean, those are just two legendary teams for sure.
Well, I couldn't have asked for anything better. I mean, leaving North Carolina, winning the championship and being the most outstanding player and being drafted by the best team in the NBA. Lakers made a trade in 1978 that sent a couple of players to Cleveland, for Cleveland's number one draft pick in 1982. And that's how I became a Laker, because usually the number one draft pick goes to the worst team most of the time. So it was a blessing in disguise going from Dean Smith and then coming out here and playing with guys like Kareem, who played for John Wood. Jamal Wilkes played for John Wooden. We had Pat Riley, who was a coach who played for Adolph Rupp at Kentucky. We had the great general manager, Jerry West. Magic Johnson played for a great college coach at Michigan State, Judd Hitchco. So we were all well-trained and well-schooled in the game of basketball and teamwork, and how to create synergy and cohesiveness. We already had that. And so it was a great collaboration of talent.
A definite great collaboration of talent. And think about the experience that you guys had on the floor. You were almost coaches on the floor with the great legends that coached you in college.
Yeah, we had guys that were verbal leaders like Magic and Michael Cooper, and you know, guys on the bench like Bob McAdoo, who played at North Carolina as well. You know, Mitch Kupchak played for Dean Smith. So we had guys who kind of, once we got together, we kind of knew, and it made it a lot easier for the coach to kind of implement his plan. And we had great leadership in the locker room and on the floor as well.
And you had that great leadership and then winning those world championships. How did it feel to be a world champion when you've won your first world title?
Well, I mean, you think about it, that's your ultimate goal. So if you'd imagine, it's very satisfying feeling after starting in October at training camp and working together with a group of guys, and then being able to, sometimes not get your goal, but when you got it, it's probably, you know, the most satisfying thing as a unit to know that, you know, you're the best in the world.
Absolutely. And the friendships you made in your career in the NBA, and to see the growth of the NBA from when you played to now, meaning the contracts and how large the NBA has grown, the Showtime really put, I believe, the NBA on the map. Between your rivalries with the Celtics for so many years, it just completely revolutionized the NBA, in my opinion, for sure, and Showtime.
Well, I mean, it was a good time for the NBA. I've got a new commissioner. Commissioner Stern came in with a new philosophy and a new infrastructure. Television contracts were construed, and you had Magic and Bird on the East Coast, West Coast, two great rivalries with a lot of history kind of, you know, began that era. And then you had Philadelphia, and you had Detroit. You had some really good teams. You know, Milwaukee was a good team. The Knicks with Bernard King, I just think there was a lot more parity. It wasn't a cakewalk for us, but you know, it really changed the way people look at the NBA and the game and the image. And I think that was the start of something really, really great.
James, you seem like a very humble man. How was your career in LA and the fact of the glitz and glamour, and how you kind of, you know, you stayed yourself, you know, you were not outspoken, you were a leader on the floor by example. How did you do that? Is that from how you grew up, you'd say, in that type of way?
No, yeah. Like most people, like most kids and most, you know, adolescents, you know, we have great parents. And, you know, I did. I had great parents, and as I got older, I tried to remember some of the things they tried to instill in my two older brothers and I, and, you know, humility is the best, and, that's you do your job, and, you know, you don't necessarily, you know, try to draw attention to yourself. Once you go for employment and you get your job, you just go out and do your job, and you go home and you try to repeat it. That's the only thing I tried to do. I didn't see myself as a, you know, I just played ball, basically. It was part of a great team. I was happy when people appreciated what I did, and I appreciated that. I tried to use that as an incentive to go out and be the best I could be at what I did.
Most definitely. We're talking to James Worthy, NBA Hall of Fame legend, world champion, and we're talking about his career and really learning about specifically James the person and how he conducted himself on and off the court. Would you say, how did you keep yourself from not getting in trouble, especially with what you know L.A. and Hollywood can bring, especially playing for the Lakers for so many years, when there were a lot, during your time, there were a lot of issues going on with professional athletes in all sports, especially at that time?
I can't say that I, was eliminated myself from, from getting into some things that I probably shouldn't have, but you always learn from, you always learn from your mistakes, in life. And try not to repeat them, and that's the key. Sometimes when people make mistakes, they dwell on it, and they let that, define who they are, and you have to move forward, whatever it is. So I've always knew that I was a good person. I always knew I was willing, like giving back to the community and helping others. And I just kept that in mind. I never really tried to be anybody other than who I've always been. And so that's the key for me. That was my formula, was to live life one day at a time, be kind to others, and use your platform to do the best you can to bring those who are less fortunate, up to your level. And when you run into problems in life, you just you take responsibility for it, and you move on, and you don't repeat it, and you try to you try to grow as a person. So. That's always been my forte. I don't take things, I try not to attach a meaning to everything. As long as I know I'm doing the best I can do, and that's it. That's simple. Keep it simple.
You're definitely keeping it simple, James, and all of us fall into the cracks, but a lot of these athletes allow certain places like this to get caught up, and then they never have the opportunity to be a legend like yourself. You made maybe some decisions that weren't always the best, but all of us have made those mistakes in life, and we learn from them, and you utilize that. So when you decided to retire, and it came to one of the most difficult decisions to say, I'm going to no longer play basketball and think about life after basketball, was that a difficult thing for you?
I've seen guys before me move on. I knew that I wasn't going to play forever. You never think that when you first start out, when you're first, second year in the league, you never think, 5-10 years from now it could be over and you have to prepare for something else. That's why college is so important. That's why having it's making sports secondary in your life. I try to tell kids all the time, you probably have a better chance of being an owner of a team or a part owner or investor in a team than you would a player, just the way it is. And so you have to, prepare yourself to learn what business you're in, know how to read your contract. There's a lot of budgeting and financial, catching up you have to do that. Most kids at 19, 20 don't have that. They don't have that ability. So it takes a lot of effort to really catch up and learn your business and learn to prepare for life afterwards, because you're still young when you retire. Most of us are in our 30s. And in most cases, that's when most adults are really starting their businesses and starting to live their life. So it's a unique business that you have to strategize a lot.
You definitely, James, have to strategize, because, my 30s is when I finally got my mindset in life and stopped, living life for myself, but for my children and my family. And 30 is kind of an age where a lot of men really grow up in certain aspects and are ready to be an entrepreneur or to work for another person in certain ways. Certain people earlier, but a lot of times maturity of men, I'd say that 30-year-old mark. So that's what a lot of athletes is when they finally retire. This is the age they're at, and they're ready to go on for life after. So you thought about it. What did you decide, first of all, once your career was over, what did you get involved with?
I always wanted to do, radio or TV. As far as broadcasting, and I took a year off. I tried to figure out, what my plan was going to be, and then I got into broadcasting right away with a local station here in Los Angeles. We did a lot of the Laker games, and a couple years ago, Time Warner purchased the exclusive rights, so I'm over there now. And I've been doing that for about since 1998. So a lot of corporate speaking, motivational speaking, and some small ventures, you know, some other small ventures that I'm involved with friends that I've known over the years to help them, you know, with their businesses and on a consulting basis. So just trying to learn, you know, more about different things in life, trying to stay busy.
So what do you like best about television, being involved in TV? Tell us what's your favorite thing.
The ability to teach people something that they might not be aware of. You know, a lot of people can go on the internet and look at stats and numbers, but sometimes to tell somebody why something happened and then show it on screen, I enjoy that. Enjoy that part of it, and the creative aspect, being able to create unique stuff for people to have a different insight into the game.
Absolutely, and you get, you're a teacher, and you have a larger platform to explain things, especially when you look at the players today, and then once you took the different route, you know, where you had to explain specifically what you learned in the game and to kind of explain it to people that might not understand the game. You enjoyed that a lot, didn't you? Especially in, as you still do today, is looking at and breaking down a team and seeing specifically why they're either winning or losing in so many ways, right?
Well, anybody can look at a highlight and anybody can say, you know, great dunk or great pass. But there's 15, 20 seconds of action that happens before the main event, usually. Usually there's a pick or there's a mistake on defense or there's something that went on throughout the play. And that's what I enjoy doing, just kind of figuring out what might be said in a timeout, what to look for, just based on, you know, what I've experienced over the years.
That's definitely true, James, and I see the teaching aspect of you is so important in everything. And you talked about you used your platform to help others. So tell us a little bit about your foundation and why you started it.
Well, the James Worthy Foundation can be found at jamesworthyfoundation.org. It's something that I always, you know, was taught by my mom, really. My mother was the first humanitarian that I ever saw. And, you know, when I was a young kid, she was a nurse, and she spent a lot of time in the neighborhood tending to elderly people, making sure that they're, you know, taking their blood pressure. And when she got home from the hospital working, she would make sure that they were administering their medicine properly. You know, I just saw her do a lot of things as a kid, so it just grew on me. And Coach Smith at the University of North Carolina, that was his main emphasis, was to use your platform for a purpose. And he was extremely conscious of that. So I always wanted to give back. I received a lot of help coming up through the boys' clubs and YMCAs and different teachers that would pull me to the side and say, hey, I see you're doing this with these guys. You don't need to do that. So I've always had that, you know, big brother kind of thing over me. So we do a lot with the military.
Wow.
My hometown, we have a lot of people that go to the military, and they come home. We help them reorient themselves back into the community financially, help them with jobs, get certain requirements for job testing and training, that kind of thing. We also do a lot with kids at youth at risk, try to give them a different alternative through, you know, through small businesses in the community. We try to pull a lot of kids off the football field and out of the gym and put them into real-life possibilities. And, you know, we try to tell them that there's only 400 potential slots in the NBA, and there's 20, 30, 40 million people trying to get it. So we try to teach them about longevity and insurance and how that works as opposed to the short, glamour life of being an athlete. And if you want to be an athlete, we tell them to be a student athlete first, and we just kind of teach them how to be an athlete. So we do a lot of stuff in the community with different organizations, help them with some of their entities, write bonds, and a lot of things that are surrounding community resources.
That's tremendous for sure, James. And definitely I could see from throughout our interview, it's all about helping others and doing what's best for the community in general. Now, you do have, you were talking about, you have some other ventures on the side of television. And one thing is, tell me why you've gotten involved in promoting Revive and Revitalize.
Well, you know, as an athlete, you're always looking for the maximum, you know, maximum product, and you know what's healthy, the maximum healthy product to put in your body. So, you know, I can remember, you know, my first vitamin was, I think, probably ginseng. Some people with the ginseng thing was going on. Then it was bee pollen. And so you're always looking for a supplement to maximize your, you know, your energy. And I have two daughters, and I watched them go through this energy drink thing with. Yes. A lot of variety of different energy drinks that have become somewhat dangerous with some of the ingredients that are in there, some of the enhancement in your energy level that it takes you to, and then it's really not, you know, healthy. So when I was approached by Rushmore, who puts the product Revive out, and they told me that. They're moving away from energy drink. In fact, we don't have an energy drink. We have a vitality drink.
Oh, okay.
Which has 21 superfruits in it. 21 superfruits meaning all natural fruits that are that are not chemically processed, and a lot of things that your doctor would tell you to eat. Like when I go to my doctor, he says eat blueberries and you know a lot of different variety of fruits that. And so this is what Revive is. It helps you to sustain the energy that you already have. We all have energy within us that needs to be generated somehow, maybe through what you eat or how you exercise, but it's there. And what Revive does is it sustains that, and it doesn't take you way up somewhere and then drop
you
off.
Yeah.
The drop-off is not good, and so that's what it does. It does it. And it's a healthy supplement that your doctor would advise. And we do have one that has a little bit of green tea in it. So if you want that extra little boost, there's one with a little green tea. And so we are now focusing on Rebuild. There are different drinks for rebuilding for people who are experiencing different challenges with weight and stuff like that. So we are in the process of coming up with some really good products that have been out for 3 or 4 years and are on the market. So it's a growing company that's really about educating people and then letting them make the right choice.
Definitely, James, and I think that through your platform, especially when you see that you believe in living a healthy lifestyle, staying in great shape, that you're happy to promote a product that is healthy for you and yet also will give you the energy to go throughout the day. We talk about entrepreneurs. We talk about people that need that extra energy when they might not get the sleep they need. This is something that will give them that extra energy. Incentive to stay going right through.
Well, and people think that, you know, a lot of people, you know, physical energy is important, but more importantly, you know, you've always heard the cliche, the quote, mind over matter. And this is really a mind energy drink as well as the body. So when your mind is able to stay focused and you're able to have longevity in what you're doing mentally, it transfers a message to your body that says, you know, I'm cool, I'm focused. And so when that message goes from your brain to your body, you have that physical energy to, it's only when you tell yourself, I'm tired, or I don't feel good. When you tell yourself that, that's what you're telling your body. So Revive allows you to mentally stay focused. It has a lot of, you know, different fruits that are combined together that give you the mental stability that transfers into being able to sustain your entire body condition throughout the day.
And I know, James, that living a healthy lifestyle is very important to you. So you're definitely sticking by the product. You would not endorse something that you say, you know, is not healthy, because living a healthy lifestyle is very important to you, isn't it, James?
I don't know, maybe 25 years ago, I heard Bill Cosby talking about his Jell-O commercials, and people were saying, why are you doing these Jell-O commercials? Because you're getting paid so much money. He said, look, I get a chance to promote a different product every day. I only promote things that I use and I believe in. So it only makes sense to, you know, go that route, because you don't want to promote something that you haven't tried or that you don't have been educated about. And you don't want to mislead people. That's not cool. So, you know, try to keep it up front and keep it, you know, keep it real. And I sleep well at night after that concept.
All right. Well, fantastic, James. Where can we find information on the products so our listeners can learn more about the different products, Rebuild, Reshape, Refocus, the different drinks, and the ingredients and stuff?
Yeah. Go to Rushmore.com or Revive.com, and you should be able to see all the different variety of fruit juices and for different health issues. That's a delicious, youthful antioxidant, and that's what I would do. Rushmore Essentials and Rushmore.com.
All right, well, fantastic. Do you have a website of your own? You already told, is it jamesworthyfoundation.org is for your foundation?
That is the foundation. That is the foundation website, jamesworthy.org. And I also have a Facebook and some other stuff. But go to jamesworthyfoundation.org, and you'll be able to find all the information necessary.
Well, James, I enjoyed taking the time. Best of luck with the rest of the season. And I thanks again for taking the time, James.
You got it, buddy.
All right, take care, man.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. You can go to TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, Total Tutor. And also Pinterest. And I tell you, I've talked to celebrities before. But when I talked about her projects and how she still has time to talk to me, and she is on TV all the time, is in the magazines all the time. So, I also say he's definitely a celebrity, but from MTV's Guy Code, Girl Code, MTV Spring Break, Maxim, everything, Chicago sports guru, Fox, April Rose. April, thanks for calling and taking the time when I just gave a laundry list of things you're doing, and you're doing them currently. How are you?
No, I'm impressed that you were able to list everything off.
Well, exactly, because what do we try to do on this show is, you know, have some small talk, but basically find out what your passion is and why you've gotten involved in all of these cool things. But let's talk, first of all, about it. Did you always want to be a celebrity, April? Because definitely with the MTV thing, that you are a celebrity. Tell us specifically your whole life you want to be in acting and all these different things.
No, I actually got out of high school and got my EMT license, cardiology tech license, and I was a crisis counselor for sexual assault victims in Chicago on and off for about 6 years. And I saw this contest for a radio station, and it was a classic rock radio station. And I was like, well, that's pretty cool. You pretty much wave and smile and get your picture taken and pop on the radio once in a while and get paid $50,000 a year. That's a lot easier than all this medical stuff. So I entered that contest and happened to win it. And from there, I just kept getting hired to do more stuff in media, and that's how it happened.
Well, it seems like, April, a lot of ways, when you think about these things, you say to yourself, you know, once you get to the right place, you move on to the next place. And I guess what's happening in sports is that definitely someone as good-looking as you are, you have the opportunities, just like everyone else in sports, that they have these sports analysts, you know, that they're sideline reporters or involved in specific things. So that feeds into opportunities, and then other opportunities come. And a lot of times when they know that you're able to work with people, more other projects come out. And that's what it sounds like it's happened with you.
Right, I hear that. And The answer to that, I'd say, I don't know if there was a question there, but I'm going to make it one, is there's a lot of really cute girls that can get far. But there's a division between, are you a cute girl that's going to work hard, do your homework, know the sport you're talking about, or know the subject you're talking about, take notes, and perform well when that red light on the camera goes on, or are you going to show up and expect everyone to do everything for you? And that's what separates the girls that are successful or the women that are successful, and then the women that kind of say, well, the industry wasn't for me, you know? Because a lot of times, very beautiful women grow up in the industry, and guys do everything for them because they're beautiful, so they're not used to having to work really hard. And so there's a difference there. You have to work really hard in this industry if you want to go anywhere in it.
Well, I've talked to models all the time, and the models that are not workable with other people, they say they don't get work. So basically, you show up, and you're right. You're not prepared. You don't show up on time. You are difficult to deal with. It doesn't matter if you're a pretty face. You're not going to get the work. It's going to be the ones that maybe weren't even trained as models, but yet are so easygoing, or, hey, I'm here. Whatever you need me to do, I'll do, that are going to get more work because you're going to get the callbacks.
You gotta be photogenic. It's our model. I'm just talking about modeling.
Yeah.
Modeling's a different story than TV. But if you're modeling, you have to be photogenic. And you're going to look at girls in the street or you know, oh, she's a model. She's signed with this agency. And she might not look like much in person, but something on camera, that camera picks up the way her face is shaped. And it's weird because, you know, you never know if someone could be photogenic or not just by looking at their face. It's some weird chemistry behind that photographer and the camera that makes somebody photogenic.
So tell me how you got the deal with MTV's Guy Code and then Girl Code. How did that happen?
Yeah, some of the guys at MTV2 were friends with some of the guys at Maxim. And they're all business guys. But in New York, kind of everyone knows a little bit about everyone in the industry. And MTV2 was looking to create a really cool new pop culture type show called Guy Code. So MTV2 went to their friends at Maxim and said, hey, we need a really edgy girl that's a little crazy, that can have fun and not be embarrassed to talk about uncomfortable issues on television. And Maxim said, well, why don't you try it for us? And that's kind of how it started. And we shot Guy Code maybe in 2011, I think it was. And now we're in our fourth season. And season four, I think April 16th is when our first episode of season four comes out. So make sure to go check that out. But yeah, it's been on the uprise with them.
Most definitely. And so from that opportunity, April, and in other ways with Maxim and everything, locally you have a lot of work as well when you say you're working with Chicago. So that's interesting. Again, the sports end of things, April. Have you always been a sports fan, or is it just kind of lucked into these specific opportunities?
No, I've always been a sports fan. It's hard not to be in Chicago. There's nothing to do all year when it's freezing cold except for watch sports. And in the summertime, what do? You play softball, you play sports. So in Chicago, it's like you don't know not to love sports. It's part of like your upbringing. It's part of the culture in Chicago. You have to be a Hawks fan. You have to be a Bulls fan. You got to choose. Are you a White Sox fan? Are you a Cubs fan? And of course, the Bears are number one in everyone's heart. There's no getting around it. You have to be a Bears fan if you live in Chicago.
And if you're not a Bears fan, forget about it.
Right.
So how long you've been a Bears fan for, April?
Are you secretly guessing my age?
No, I'm not secretly guessing your age.
You could have been. Since I was born, I was born a Bears fan. I'll die a Bears
Who's
fan.
Your favorite Bear ever? Who's your favorite Bear you've watched ever?
You were talking to me earlier before we were on air about Anthony Adams, who was a great Bears player, but also just a great leader as far as passion for the sport and having fun and not taking himself too seriously. And he's just a fun, goofy guy. Then there's also Matt Forte, who's currently on our team. He's a running back. And I love Matt because he is a guy that takes his job really seriously. He's got a hyperbaric chamber at his home. He treats his body like it's a machine for the city. It's really important. He doesn't, you know, he's not out late at night. He's a good family man, and he's a good role model for the team. So, I mean, I could keep going on. I keep naming players and why I like them. So stop me at any time.
So do you work with Anthony at all? Have you done because you do work with the Bears?
Yeah, I definitely. I work on a Bears pregame show, but I do more fun stuff with them. I'm playing horse with them. We're going roller skating. We're doing weird, crazy stuff. And you know, I'm not talking about football. And I'm not doing the X's and O's. I'm not dissecting the offensive line. I'm just having fun. And a lot of times, people love to get to know these players. It's more fun to watch them on the field when you know a little bit about them, and you kind of root for them in a different way when you really care about them as a person and want them to win.
And that's most definitely. So this must be a childhood dream to be working with the Bears, for sure.
Of course. I love the Bears. How could you not love the Bears?
So no one else would, like, for, let's think about this. You have Maxim. You have MTV's Girl Code. You do all these other MTV projects. You can tell that this is your passion to be parts of sports because you love sports, that you probably are so busy with the other projects.
You're just
into the sports.
I love covering sports. It's funny, and I talk to a lot of the teams that I work with. One week I'm on a hockey show. The next week I'm doing football. The next week I'm on Guy Code talking about penises. You know, it just jumps from subject to subject. But as long as you study up on your homework and you know a little bit about what you're talking about, you just have fun with it, and that's what I do.
And so what is your hope with this? What do you want to at one point end up on the Fox Sunday show or anything, or covering sideline reporting?
I'm gonna cure world hunger, the leader in world peace, all for wearing a bikini on the beach. I don't know. And when I started working in radio, I didn't never expect it to be hosting MTV Spring Break. That was just not a concept. I was never a confident kid growing up. I wasn't talkative. So I'm just always surprised. Every year I seem to be doing more and more. So I kind of surprised myself.
It surprises you, and it's something that you're like, wow, where am I going next with this? And so
right.
You have this show continue to have success. You have the sports deal. Is there any other projects I'm missing? I know you have the Maxim. What else?
Yeah, I mean, right now I'm in the middle of 8 episodes of a Blackhawks show in Chicago. And it's fun. It's called Chicago Face Off with April Rose. It's on Comcast SportsNet. And, only if you live in Chicago, you can see it. But it's neat because we really take the players off the ice and do challenges with them and get to know them. And like I said earlier, it's more fun watching the sport when you know a little bit about each player. And that's what I'm passionate about is, men and getting girls into watching sports. But guys, they know the X's and O's, and they know the stats on their players, and they're playing their fantasy football, and they're watching every move. But once you get to know these guys as real people, it enhances any sport that you're watching. And so that's kind of where I fit in and have fun with these athletes and goof around. And I'm not, intimidating them at all. We're having a nice, relaxed conversation about real life stuff.
And you're living the dream, it sounds like, April, for sure. And that's the key component. And you're excited about, again, the continued success with the MTV deal, and you have your sports deal. And so are you ever thinking about writing a book with your story?
I think I could write a book. I don't know if anyone would want to read it. But there's a lot of history as far as that jump that I went for the medical field and the counseling I went into, and then transitioning into the media world, and my perspective on life pretty much changed, when I transitioned. And I still kept a lot of I want to say gratefulness for life and different stuff, because working in the hospitals, there's the real issues. And so when I'm on set and there's a problem with my hair or makeup, people are freaking out about that. I you got to remember, this isn't the end of the world. There's some real stuff going on. So I'm glad I started out in the medical field, because I think it kind of keeps me in perspective of what's really important.
Absolutely, April. And I could just see you going further and further and say, people will want to read your book. Trust me. You don't understand how many people I interview all the time that have written books. And you're telling a story, and you're going from one area to the next area. You're also an actress. Do you have a goal in acting? Or are you doing any acting right now? Or are you waiting on, do you want?
You know, acting's tough for me because I live in Chicago. And if you're, you know, to be taken seriously in the acting world, you got to live in L.A. And I totally appreciate that. You want a career in acting, you go to L.A. and you go to you audition. And it's a grind. And, you know, I'm not in L.A. So when I was in Grown Ups 2 with Adam Sandler this past summer, and how that came along is I was hosting a weekly series for Maxim called Maximum Exposure that I wrote, and his assistant happened to come across me on there, and she told me that they actually originally asked Katy Perry to play my part as a dance teacher, and she wouldn't do it for whatever reason, conflict, who knows. And luckily, she wouldn't do it because Adam Sandler's assistant happened to stumble across my web series on Maxim, and she said, you know what, that girl would be perfect, and that's how I got hired.
So there's not enough films in Chicago to keep you working yet, but someday I could see you. But when would you have time to act with all the things you're doing? I don't know. That'll have to be where you figure out in your career, where you're going next, the next big break, and especially working with MTV. You know it'll happen, April. So that's Sunny. You're going through life. You don't have that next level where you want to go next. You're just going to let life take its play, take its role and go to the next thing, it sounds like, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the way. I don't have a big head and say I'm going to be, you know, hosting the biggest sports show in the universe and, you know, all that stuff. Of course, you know, I'd love to get up there, but I want to contribute what I can. I'm not going to pretend like I'm a sports analyst. I'm not going to pretend like I know everything about that. But what I would love to do is, you know, ideally have my own show at something I'm best at, which is connecting with people on a more real personal level and bringing that to America. And, you know, I just think that would be something I would love to do.
Well, I think that you definitely will, April. So where can we find information on you, follow you on Twitter, learn more about you and all that you do?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at @tweetsAprilRose, and Instagram is at Real April Rose, and Facebook is Official April Rose. I think those are all the things. April Rose, just Google April Rose. You'll be good to go.
Yeah, find you. So best of luck in all the different ventures, and I appreciate you calling me. It was a fun conversation.
Awesome.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
All right, see ya. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, and Pinterest, Neil Haley. And I'm so excited to interview child actors. And I tell you what, it's just interesting, this one for sure. And I want to learn about this show. So I'm so excited to welcome the program from the NBC hit show Crisis, Josh Ehrenberg. Josh, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Josh, and I know that you're in California now, and I was able to get you out of school. So, what class were you in when you had to that you were able to get out of?
I'm sorry. What?
What class did you end up having to miss to talk to me?
Oh, you got me at PE.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Maybe not. A lot of people are not as huge into PE anymore. So, were you happy? No, good.
I'm kind of glad you got me out of that too. But right now we've just been sitting and waiting because food trucks are coming to our school today.
Okay. All right. Cool. All right, Josh. So, tell me specifically your background and how you became an actor.
Well, my family, we all have that one little side because I've had cancer, which is a big part of the business. And I grew up watching, you know, like Barney's Wiggles, all that other stuff. And my favorite scenes I'd reenact. And my mom saw my grandmother out of me. My grandmother did theater, and my mom immediately knew I had to get into classes because I was going to be an actor.
Yeah.
And she was right.
Yeah, and so did you have like that special gift? They thought they said we got to get you to become an actor from just how natural you are. Is that what your family?
Yeah,
thought? Yeah. Yeah,
cool. So it was pretty much that. My mom saw this gift and decided to use it at the right moment.
And so from there, you basically started working. What was your first acting gig?
My first job came after 2 years of not getting anything was The Green Hornet, which came out 2011, yeah, January. It was Seth Rogen, Tom Wilkinson. They had some pretty big names on there, but it was pretty cool because I got to play young Seth Rogen.
How cool is that? So basically, so you got to play that, and then before you know it, things started taking off. 2 years not getting any work. Did that discourage you?
I'm sorry?
Did that discourage you, having 2 years where you said you weren't able to find anything till you got the Green Hornet job?
Yeah, I mean, after waiting and waiting of time, the biggest of opportunities will come. I mean, you can't give up.
And that's so true. You never give up, and that's the biggest part of the whole game in acting is waiting. And so then from there, where did you go? Was it Crisis, or did you have another thing after the Green Hornet?
After Green Hornet, I kind of did some other things to the side. After that, I did Children's Hospital on Adult Swim after Cartoon Network. I did a couple of episodes of Spurgatory. I did an episode of Conan. I've kind of pushed my way up a bit. I dragged myself there, and I'm really grateful that I did. And after pushing for years and years, I got the big one. Crisis.
Oh, yeah. So tell me about this specifically when you read for Crisis. You must have been just amazed once you got the gig and said, wow, my life's going to change.
Yeah, well, originally when I got the audition, we were in this process of moving. And the only one thing that was in my mind was moving. And as I got a call for this, the written script, I thought, this is me. And I went into the audition. The casting director comes out and thanks my mom for coming in. And after that, in the elevator on the way down out of the building, my mom looks at me. I look at her and I say, I am Anton Roff. And it's really cool to be able to play Anton Roff because I couldn't ask for a better character.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. So tell me about the character now. So basically, once you got this character, and what's the premise of Crisis and how you play it on Crisis? Tell me about it.
Well, Anton Roff is this really smart kid. He's 12 years old. He skipped a grade. So basically, he goes on this field trip with his high school friends. Well, not friends, but his high school classmates. And the bus gets hijacked, and as it does, Anton, being the scaredy cat he is just completely mind-blown. Oh, my God, this is happening. And he falls, and Lance Gross, who plays Marcus Finley, he was just recently shot by his partner and decides, I can save this one kid. So he goes over, saves Anton, and sort of teaches Anton how to be a brave person, and you can kind of see over on in the show, you can see how much he's changed from being this little shy, scaredy cat to somebody that's fine cussing around other people, and he's a new person now because of Marcus Finley.
So from that, on the show after that episode, so your life changes in what way on the show? So you continue to be a character on it, right? Correct? Because they do have different storylines each week on Crisis, right?
Yes, there are. Well, there are many different many different stories about other people who all combine into the one big plot. And the one big plot is the big deal. But, yeah, each episode sort of has their own little story to tell, and their own little story to tell just won't end, and it's kind of hard to continue watching unless you enjoy the suspense.
And especially when you're thinking about hijackings and stuff, and you're a kid, and all these things. So, Josh, and so basically, playing this character, just to give for our audience to understand this, basically, each week are you part of the show, or was it just the one episode, or is your character continues to go on throughout the season?
Well, yeah, my character does go on throughout the season. I can't really say much, but all I can say is you should keep watching. Anything can happen.
So you can't give us any information. So good, you're coached well. All right. So what I think that's so awesome about Crisis is really it does also teach people in certain aspects how to deal with something like this, right? Wouldn't you agree on the show and the certain things and what can happen? So what do you think of that in that process when people ask you about, you know, playing this role, and could you imagine in real life?
Well, I would agree that it does teach people that, and I also would agree that it does teach people how to cover up a murder in others, but this show does, it is able to teach people what to do if there were a crisis. And it even shows the many emotions that you would see out of the people if this were to really happen. I mean, you got me who cries in the corner. You got Marcus Finley who just goes for it. And you've got the fly on the wall. You've got everybody. And it shows the many emotions that would happen. And it does definitely teach people what to do if there were a crisis. But I can't say you should always follow the FBI's rules. I mean, they've got their way, but we've got our way.
So basically, Josh, from talking about that, I think that it really looks at how, and you could have a lot of conversations with your classmates in a way and say, what would you do if you were in that situation? I mean, Josh, it's scary to look at. My flagship station's Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I think you've heard some things that have happened in the Pittsburgh area in the last couple of weeks. It would be scary to be about of a crisis like what happened with the big stabbing that happened in Pittsburgh, and what would they do in that situation? So I'm sure you're getting questions and thought process thinking about this, especially when it's dealing with children in a crisis.
Mm-hmm. What's surprising is I've actually never really had anybody ask me this question. I've been bullied like my whole life, and I've even told my classmates that there's a problem. Come to me and you can talk it out with me. I don't mind. And if there were to be a crisis like this, I would stick up for anybody, to be honest. I'm sort of used to guest threats and other stuff because I've been bullied my entire life.
Oh, Josh, I hope that we can through your celebrity status, we can help fight this because there was another issue that happened in Pittsburgh a week later where a kid filmed the kids bullying him in the classroom, and the teachers did nothing about it, and he got charged for wiretapping. So there's just a problem, and I'm glad you brought this out, that you have been bullied. And I think all of us in life have been bullied, but we have to figure out a way to eliminate this. And through your status on the show, you can really make a difference. So I'm glad that you brought this up on the show, and we'll definitely put this out through social media as well. But, it's great to say you can talk to people because you just never know what can happen in a situation, and especially what happened outside of Pittsburgh with a kid that was bullied from what we're hearing and just took it into his own hands, or we've heard about these other situations where kids have taken it in their own hands. How do you respond to these crises and different aspects? It's really scary. So I think this show really shows parents, it shows kids, it shows everyone. What do I do? Well, thanks again for calling. I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show, okay?
Thank you.
All right, take care, Josh. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and we're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show and the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook. And I'm really excited to have a really quick interview, but such an honor to have on the program Emmy Award winner Dan Bukatinski, James Novak on the ABC hits drama Scandal. Dan, thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
I'm really excited, and I know that you have something that you have another guest with us today, and we're going to talk about something that is that you have, which is celiac disease, and
yes.
You're here to inform us about that. So tell us who else we have on the line.
Well, about 7 or 8 years ago, after my father passed away, I was diagnosed with celiac disease, which is an autoimmune disease that mix wheat gluten, which a lot of people don't realize is in wheat products and a lot of other products like soy sauce and many others. It literally makes your antibodies in your body attack itself. And the only way to fight it is to eat a completely clean and simple gluten-free diet, which I didn't even know what it was at the time. Completely stressful. But I was introduced very early on to products and simple foods like a Lara bar. And that's what Laura's here, who created it out of just three ingredients. I'm telling you, like, anytime there's more than three or four ingredients on any package, I have to run.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, Laura, how are you? Laura Merkin. I'm really excited to talk to you as well and how this is able to help people with celiac disease and also people that are looking for gluten-free products. Tell us a little about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hi. Good morning, Neil. Thanks for having us. When I created Lara Bar, my goal was to make something that tasted indulgent and delicious, but it was made of very simple and gluten-free ingredients, just fruit, nuts, and spices. So one of Dan's favorites is cherry pie, and there's just three simple ingredients in there: almonds, cherries, and dates. That's it.
And you came up with this whipping up like a Cuisinart.
Well, I got inspired on a hike one day in the Rocky Mountains a little over 10 years ago, and I thought, why hasn't somebody made something indulgent and delicious, but it's really made of whole foods and good for us?
Well, as a celiac, you get so tired of eating stuff that tastes like mulch, and these are so. This was like real food. It tasted like you were having dessert, and it has energy in it. And I'm a dad, so I'm always feeding my kids and trying to come up with desserts that aren't so brownie-like.
Well, and I got my inspiration from pies and cookies and cakes, just using fruit, nuts, and spices.
Awesome.
That was my intention.
You know, it's amazing, Dan, is that the fact is when you're, you know, filming and doing all these different things that you do, you need to have that quick on to grab a bar really quickly, especially and so that you keep to your diet.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And also, I was juggling, like, I have very small kids at home, and I certainly have been ever since I've been acting on the show. And at Scandal, there's, you know, you go to the craft service table, and it's all bagels and croissants and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And you're so psyched when there's something very simple and delicious that you can have, and you don't feel like you're depriving yourself. And I'm always putting bars, Lara bars, in my bag. I used to put them in the diaper bag, the glove compartment of my car, and they're on set. So that is definitely an added bonus.
So you must be really excited for Dan to be speaking about this, Laura, especially having someone as an Emmy Award winner to be on to help promote your product.
Well, it's a true honor, and again, my intention was to make this product really great and good for a lot of different people with special diets, but also people that just want to simply eat healthy.
Right.
And it's wonderful that it reaches out to so many different people.
Well, I'm glad to have you both on the show. I know everyone needs to go check out your Facebook.com Lara Bar page and also www.larabar.com to find out more information on you. And we all could check out Dan on Scandal and much, much more. So I appreciate you guys both coming by to take time to talk about it. And for people that are dealing with celiacs, they need to really look for an alternative by having this bar so that they can stick to their diet. So thanks again for calling, guys.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, powered by the Simply G Media Network, and we'll be back in just a moment.